The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. Welcome to a Wednesday, everyone, and a lot going on. It's a crazy day. Things in Washington, D.C. are nuts. I know a lot of the people there are nuts, but just everything is nuts. Hernan in the YouTube chat room just wrote, "So Rand Paul is going to submit a complaint to the DOJ about Dr. Fauci's nefarious and audacious ways for leading through science. Does he think he's going to get him arrested?" You know, I guess Rand, who names their kid Rand? Anyway, Rand, he with the hair, is, was so, I guess, taken aback by Dr. Fauci not taking any more of his shit. You know, Rand Paul is one of those people who just doles it out and doles it out and doles it out, but can't take it when it comes back at him, obviously, because he's going to file with the DOJ. Now, I guess if there ever were an attorney general who would do something stupid like go to bat for Rand Paul, it would be Merrick Garland. And I know you don't have to tell me it wasn't Merrick Garland who put the kibosh on holding Wilbur Ross accountable for lying to Congress. That was the Trump Justice Department, which is kind of an oxymoron because there was no justice in the Trump administration. But I'm not overly impressed with the Justice Department in the Biden administration either. Although the official news did come down that Joe Biden is nominating, and of course, his name escapes me. I want to say like Jason Kander or something like that. But the guy that everyone's been talking about who should lead the antitrust division at the Department of Justice, that's who Biden is nominating. My response was when I read it that Biden's going to nominate him. What are you waiting for? Do it already. This should have already happened. But that is the prayer. Randall, his name is Randall. Okay. Thank you, C. Fields. His name is Randall. All right. Rand Paul. Rand. No, well, see, C. Fields says his name is Randall. And then Diane Russell says what I had heard was that, you know, he was named or called Rand for Ayn Rand, one of the most, sickening authors. I'll never forget, you know, my kid, Allison, it was never much of a reader. She didn't like reading. She didn't like school. She's bright. She just was not a good student. And so when she did bring home a book to read, I was always excited. I'll never forget. The first book I remember her getting really excited about was one called Gifted Hands. And she's telling me about it. And she's like, "Mom, this guy, he grew up like in the projects and he became this amazing brain surgeon and he separated conjoined twins." And it's Ben Carson. Oh, my God. And then one day she had a fountainhead or something. I'm like, "Really? You're going to read? Don't read that shit. I'll give you a really good book to read." But, you know, you can't reason with kids. They're going to do what they're going to do. Ugh, Rand. Ugh. Whether it's the Ayn variety or the Paul variety, either way, Rand? No, we don't go there. All right. So more happened today. So we had heard it took Kevin McCarthy, the House Minority Leader, forever to name his five members to sit on the House Select Committee to investigate what happened on January 6th. You may recall Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, said there will be 12, was it 12 members? And she would put forth eight. And he would get five, right? So my numbers are screwed. I'm the worst at math. So, you know, with me and numbers, I need to write those things down. Anyway, she was going to get the you know, the majority, as she should. Because first of all, let's back up a second. This was the second choice. The first was going to be an independent bipartisan commission on sitting on, along the lines of the 9/11 commission. There would not be any sitting members of Congress on this commission. They would bring in people from the outside, and both parties would get to, you know, at least suggest participants to sit on the panel, right? Well, no, the Republicans didn't want that. Why? Because that would be too fair. So the next step was to create a select House committee. And that's what Nancy Pelosi did. And obviously, she's going to have more members than the Republicans simply because her party is in the majority. That's how it works, or how it's supposed to work in Washington, D.C. Majority rules. Isn't that like one of the first rules of democracy? So anyway, so she named her, was it six, seven? She got seven and he got five. That's the way it works. So to her 12. And as one of her seven, she named Liz Cheney. Liz Cheney, a Republican, a conservative. And, you know, in this day and age, so many of these right wingers erroneously call themselves conservatives. They're not conservative at all. They're right wingers. They're hardcore, crazy right wingers. You know, I'm so sick of being called a radical leftist. I'm a liberal. I'm a progressive liberal Democrat, but I prefer the progressive and the liberal more than the Democrat label because, frankly, I'm not thrilled with that party. And unfortunately, as much as we want to maybe deny it, we live in a two-party system. It, we just do. That's how it works. This is not a parliamentarian parliamentary system of government where we have a number of different parties. If you go the route of a third party, you're basically saying, I give up. As much as I would have liked to have seen, say, the Green Party come up and make some change, make some noise, make a difference, it's never going to happen. The main reason, and I've been saying this for years, is because they come out of the woodworks every 4 years, like the year before a presidential election, and they'll put up a candidate and they'll make a little bit of noise, but then they disappear. They are not a force to be reckoned with. Now, I'm more surprised than anybody else that we haven't, that during the Trump years, we didn't see the rise of a third and even a fourth party. Because frankly, both of our major political parties, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, they're both really trying to watch my language lately, but there's really no other way to put it. They're both fucked up. The Republicans, we know that they've totally jumped the shark. This is a party who they had the incumbent president, and when he ran for re-election, they didn't even put out a new platform for 2020, a party platform. It's like standard operating procedure, and they didn't do it. What they did was they took the 2016 platform and said, we're just going to go with this one again. Well, written into the 2016 Republican platform was something along the lines of, I'm paraphrasing, obviously, I don't have it in front of me, but it said, we will unseat the current administration, who at the time when they wrote that was Barack Obama, right? They didn't even fix that language. That's how lazy they are. They're just like, we're the party of Trump. We're not gonna put out any work. They did nothing to make lives better for Americans, right? They do nothing. They've all embraced the big lie. Even after, you know, January 6th, that night, we saw that day as the siege was happening, we see many of them cowering on the floor and pushing, you know, furniture against the doors leading into the House chamber. And one of those guys who was doing that is the guy who then later on said, it was just like a normal tourist day at the Capitol. If not for whatever, you would never even know if not for the news coverage. I don't know what kind of bullshit they were slinging, but it was coming fast and furious. It was the gaslighting is just undeniable. This is a part, their Lord and Savior, El Trumpo, is a liar. He is a habitual, unmitigated liar. And so they figured, well, that strategy works for him. I'll make it work for us too. There used to be a saying, you know, country over party. These people don't know the meaning of that. So that's the Republican Party. The Democratic Party, they're just inept. Leadership is past their prime. And again, I hate to call people out because of age, but they, you know, I'm sorry. The House of Representatives, the top three in pecking order are Nancy Pelosi, Steny Hoyer, and James Clyburn. And I think the median age among them all is like 82. Not that they, you know, there's nothing wrong with older people who are still lucid and with it, working, but this is the highest levels of our government. And there comes a time when it's time for them to go home and you embrace the younger people. And I got to tell you, I'm so energized by the young, active progressives out there. They're the ones who are going to change the world. Now, I came in, I'm a boomer. I'm a baby boomer. I was born in November of 1959. So I think the baby boom years officially ended in 64. So I'm right. I'm at the tail end of it, right? And then the next generation was Gen X, right? Well, the boomers fucked it all up. The Gen Xers did nothing, no better. And then the millennials, they're kind of, you know, what was the thing about the millennials? They were lazy. Well, now I think the next generation, this is the Gen Zers. They're the ones who are going to change the world because they have no choice. Their planet is burning up, right? Everything is imploding around them. When I hear that a young person or a couple is having a baby, my first thought is, oh, how nice for them. And my next thought is, oh, how horrible for that new child, for that baby. Because the life this child is going to lead, we're already seeing the effects of climate change. And I've been thinking this way for well over a year or two now, certainly before COVID. And COVID only made it worse. Who would want to bring a child into this world knowing what they're going to live? You just look at the I hate to call them weather events, the climate events. China, you know, floods came in and took out entire towns. I mean, these things are happening everywhere. All those, you know, those worst case scenario videos that we saw. This is what's going to happen when it, you know, when climate change takes effect. Well, those things are happening now, earlier than they ever predicted. And they're happening now. And I get it. You know, young couples are still getting married and still having kids. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it 22 years ago. I guess I could have. I chose to adopt because, frankly, I didn't want to bring another life onto this planet. But, oh boy, I'm certainly digressing. So let's get back to what happened today. So Nancy Pelosi says, all right, Kevin McCarthy, I see those five names, the people that you have nominated to our select January 6th committee. And, well, out of those five, two are simply unacceptable. Simply unacceptable. So one thing to notice, I should bring this up here. So for those of you watching on video, today's little show card has a picture of the five Republicans that Kevin McCarthy nominated to the committee and a picture of our friend Harvey J.K. because he's going to join us in about 15 minutes. But the five names on this list, and you'll notice I have the little, you know, circle with the slash through it, meaning they're gone. So Nancy Pelosi said no to two of the five. The two she said no to were Representative Jim Banks of Indiana and Jim Jordan of Ohio. Well, I understand the Jim Jordan thing, but apparently both he, Jordan, and Banks And a third one, a guy named, what's his name? Niels, Representative Troy Niels of Texas, all voted to, you know, supporting the insurrection. They voted to not certify the votes on January 6th. That's what the whole thing was about. So they're part of the insurrectionist caucus. Right there alone, that's enough for me to say, no, they don't belong there. So Nancy Pelosi singled out two of them, two of the three. And what she did, she wrote a statement. So let me share the statement with you, okay? It reads, quote, "The violent domestic attack on Congress on January 6th was the worst assault on the Capitol since the War of 1812 and the worst domestic assault on American democracy since the Civil War. We are facing a radically new threat in the kinds of forces that combined to attack our government on January 6th. The future of our democracy is on the line. The assault was an attempt to overthrow the government." And let me stop here and say, she's not overstating anything there. That is exactly what happened on January 6th. And I hope every one of us remembers the horror we felt that day, because the Republicans are once again gaslighting the nation, saying, oh, it wasn't so bad. It was no big deal. No big deal. Anyway, Pelosi's statement continues. "We need a comprehensive investigation as to who organized this attack, who paid for it, how they nearly succeeded in overthrowing a presidential election, why they did it, and how we must organize ourselves to prevent anything like it from ever happening again. It had been our hope to establish a bipartisan, independent national commission, but there's no prospect for that commission at this time because of insufficient support from Republican senators." Duh. "Therefore, the House established the Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. The Select Committee on the January 6th insurrection will investigate and report upon the facts and causes of the terrorist mob attack on the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. It will also be charged with reporting its findings, conclusions, and recommendations for preventing future attacks." She continues, "Monday evening, the minority leader recommended five members to serve on the select committee. I've spoken with him this morning about the objections raised about Representatives Jim Banks and Jim Jordan and the impact their appointments may have on the integrity of the investigation. I also informed him that I was prepared to appoint Representatives Rodney Davis, Kelly Armstrong, and Troy Niels, the other three that McCarthy placed on the committee, and requested that he recommend two other members. With respect for the integrity of the investigation, with an insistence on the truth, and with concern about statements made and actions taken by these members, I must reject the recommendation of Representatives Bank and Jordan to the Select Committee." And to that, I say, hell yeah. You know, that is the right thing for her to do. Can you imagine Jim Jordan on that committee? What a circus it would be. And the other guy I'm not really familiar with, but he was supposed to be the ranking member, and apparently he's a flamethrower too. So I listened to Kevin McCarthy's response. I guess I could play it for you. I mean, he just turns my stomach so much that I didn't want to. But let's see if I can find it here, because of course I did not pull I didn't pull that audio. Where did I put it? Maybe I'm not going to be able to find it. I see Jeffrey Bezos's dick launch, because that's what it was, really. It was his, you know, penis replacement. All right, of course. Was this it? No, that's not it. All right, I don't know where it is. So just take my word for it. Kevin McCarthy was, here it is. All right, so I'll play as much as I can stomach of it. Oh, I can even play video, I think. Let's see, I can do this while we're talking. So Kevin McCarthy, by the way, you know, he was supposed to be speaker before Paul Ryan, and he's run into nothing but troubles, but problems, and was rejected, basically. And now, you know, he wants to be speaker yet again. I don't think it'll work. Anyway, so here's Kevin McCarthy. She's, you know, say Nancy Pelosi said no.
Mr. Leader, you're complaining that you don't have a bipartisan opportunity here to investigate January 6th, but you stood in the way of a bipartisan commission that would be made up of independent members.
No, I didn't.
Number of Republicans and Democrats.
No, I didn't.
Your conference voted against that. At least a majority of your conference voted against that, and it was blocked in the Senate. Why did you not allow that to go forward if what you say you want is a bipartisan investigation that might happen on January 6th?
For the same politics Pelosi played then.
Oh, bullshit.
At the same time when she used the scope of that.
What?
Remember how long it took? On January 13th, Rodney Davis and myself both requested 9/11.
Okay, you know what? I'm not. He just lies. This is why I didn't want to play it. He lies about everything. So instead, let me play for you what Liz Cheney said. So Liz Cheney, who is on Nancy Pelosi's panel, one of her seven members, this is what Liz Cheney said to the cameras.
The attack on this building on January 6th was the worst attack on this Capitol. Since 1814, it was an attack on our Constitution. We supported what would have been the very best option, which was a bipartisan, independent commission. The minority leader opposed that.
Even those who ran the 9/11 commission,
Senate, and the Senate blocked it. The American people deserve to know what happened. The people who did this must be held accountable. There must be an investigation that is nonpartisan, that is sober, that is serious, that gets to the facts wherever they may lead.
Okay.
And at every opportunity, the minority leader has attempted to prevent the American people from understanding what happened, to block this investigation. Today, the speaker objected to two Republican members. She accepted three others.
Yep.
She objected to two, one of whom may well be a material witness to events that led to that day, that led to January 6th. The other, who disqualified himself by his comments in particular over the last 24 hours, demonstrating that he is not taking this seriously, he is not dealing with the facts of this investigation, but rather viewed it as a political platform. This investigation must go forward. The idea that anybody would be playing politics with an attack on the United States Capitol is despicable and is disgraceful. And I am absolutely dedicated and committed to making sure that this investigation holds those accountable who did this and ensures that it never happens again. And the American people deserve that, and that is what we're going to do.
Did you urge? Did you
okay, good for her. Then she took some questions, but that's what it was. You know, I am no fan of Liz Cheney's or her father's, but she is a conservative as opposed to just a flame-throwing right-wing Republican. She's got conservative values. I'm diametrically opposed to everything she stands for, politically, socially, you know, just the opposite of her. But on this, at least she wants to do the right thing. She's putting country ahead of party. She's putting the Constitution before the politics, which is what every single elected official should do. But on the right, people like Liz Cheney are rare. It's her and Adam Kinzinger, who I understand. I know Twin Mom Sue on Twitter is one of our regular listeners, and she lives in his district and is not a fan of his. But, my God, if you've got to be represented by a Republican, at least there's one with integrity. At least there's one who says, you don't overthrow the government. If you lose an election, you accept the loss and you move on. So this is where we are. It's really sad. So now Kevin McCarthy says they're going to mount their own investigation. Give me a fucking break. Yeah, their investigation. I'm sure it's going to be so fair. And that's why we're just broken. Our government is broken. And that's why I really don't understand why we haven't seen the rise of other parties. The Republican Party is, I don't think it can survive. You know, there are a lot of people who are anti-Democrat, right? They think that we're socialists. If only the Democratic Party were a little bit more socialist. And I'm not talking communist. That's a different thing. But you see, that side doesn't want their people educated. They don't want you to know the difference between communism, socialism, and fascism. They think they're all, well, they act as if they're all interchangeable. And they act as if they're interchangeable with democratic policies when it's, you know, they need to just look in the mirror. It's infuriating because it's the dumbing down of America. I guess it was Donald Trump's goal and the Republicans' goal because just like they don't want you to vote, they don't want you to know too much because the more information you have, the more dangerous you are to them. I don't see how we can go on like this on both ends. Look, I'm also as freaked out as I am about the Republicans and what they're doing to this nation. I'm equally or almost as equally freaked out about the Democrats. I'm worried. Ellie Mistal has a great piece up at The Nation right now. I'm trying to get him on the show for next week. But basically what he's saying is, you know, even if we get the For the People Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act passed, it does nothing to prevent the dirty tricks that the Republicans are up to now, namely in over 40 states, over 400 pieces of legislation designed to keep you and I from voting. And by you and I mean people who are more likely to vote Democratic. And if in the process they sweep up a few hundred or thousand Republicans, that's okay with them too, because you know the infamous words of Paul Weyrich, say it.
Now many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome, good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Okay, so you've heard that a million times, but that was 1980. That's called playing the long game. They stake out a position and they go for it. The Democrats are kind of like, what are we going to do today? All right, well, let's try to get infrastructure passed. Well, you know, there is no long-term vision. If there were, Nancy Pelosi would have turned over the gavel to somebody younger with more progressive ideas. So anyway, Ellie Mistal has a piece up at The Nation. And basically, he said, well, here's a paragraph. He writes, in Shelby County, by the way, Shelby County was a Supreme Court case that ultimately did away with Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. That's the prior clearance provision, saying that if a state that has a history of racially motivated voter suppression wants to make changes to their rules, they need to get pre-clearance from the Justice Department because they've already proven who they are. So this is an extra layer of checks and balances on them, basically. And it struck that down. That's what Shelby County was. So back to Ellie Mistal, he wrote, in Shelby County, Roberts calls the original Voting Rights Act extraordinary 9 times. He does not use that word as a compliment. He means it literally. He thinks that the Voting Rights Act is something extra that exists outside the ordinary operation of laws. Instead of a bedrock achievement of decency over darkness, Roberts views the Voting Rights Act as an abnormal emergency fire hose of federal power that should be turned off as soon as the crosses cool off. His entire objection is written in the language of segregationists, who object to the very notion that the federal government can step in and tell them what to do. A bill that essentially does away with Section 4's coverage formula or expands to the point where all states are subjected to Section 5's pre-clearance scheme would surely be viewed as a law of northern aggression by Roberts. What he's saying is, you know, unless the Supreme Court is expanded, unless You know, because it's the Republicans who've packed the court. Forget about the semantics and what they're trying to lay on the Democrats. The Republicans, through lying, cheating, and stealing, because that's what they know how to do, stole at least two Supreme Court seats, probably a third, because we still don't know why Kennedy suddenly decided to retire. There's questions there. So the Republicans have stolen two, possibly, probably three Supreme Court seats. They're the ones who pack the court. So with this talk of expanding the court to make it a little more balanced, the Republicans are calling that packing. Again, it's projection. It's opposite world. Remember when you're a kid, I'm rubber, you're glue. Everything you say bounces off me and sticks to you. That's who they are. And so when they accuse the left of packing the court, it's only because that's what they themselves did. It's classic projection. I should get a psychotherapist on the show to talk about the warped, mental state of the Republican Party today. So anyway, that's going on. So what Ellie Mistal is writing about is it doesn't matter whatever they want to say about the packing the court or anything. The only way, even if we got the For the People Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act passed, nothing in either of those pieces of legislation would preclude the Republicans from doing the shit they're doing now in something like 40 states where Republicans run the legislature. And that is make these laws that allow them to do away with the elected election officials in a particular county and replace them with their own partisan hacks and thereby overturn the election. Exactly what Donald Trump wanted to do, but they didn't have the right people in place. Well, now this would allow them to put those, quote, right people in place so they could do just that. Let me say it again. In the For the People Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, both of which are imperative that we pass if we want to keep the idea of open elections in this country, if we want to believe that we all have the right to vote, which we certainly don't, that still wouldn't be enough. So this is, we're at that point where people have got to realize it. And what the Biden administration seems to be banking on is pouring a lot of money and manpower and effort into getting out the vote and voter registration drives. And look, yeah, we did 81 million people or thereabouts came out and voted for Joe Biden, which is a pretty amazing feat when you consider, it was Joe Biden. I think a lot of them are people like me who are simply voting, would have voted for my dog Jackson as long as it wasn't Donald Trump. And so, but for us to, for them to bank on that happening again, I'm scared. It makes me nervous. Again, there are no protections in place to get around this kind of shenanigans that they are working on in every state where they control the legislature. This is a 10-alarm fire. And the Democratic Party doesn't seem to be quite so concerned. So let me ask our guest if he's concerned. First, we gotta get him in here. Where are you, Harvey? Harvey, and I can't find Harvey's open. Oh, did I lose it again? I know he's here somewhere. Harvey, I know you're here somewhere. You got to be here somewhere. There. Okay, I know he's here.
Well, where is he?
Where is who?
Where is Harvey?
Oh, you mean Harvey J.K.
Yeah, huh?
Well, he's coming up right now on the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, there he is. Hey, Harvey J.K., hey. Professor of Democracy and Justice Emeritus at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. Who better to ask about stuff like this? So, Harvey, I'm obviously kind of freaked out that the Democrats just seem to be coasting along, not taking this situation seriously enough.
Look, I'm freaked out too, seriously. You know, one of the things that's so amazing about all this is that it's not like these things happened overnight. I mean, in the state of Wisconsin, people just had to realize they reapportioned and literally drove the Democrats into the minority for years to come.
Right.
They passed a voter ID law that was intended to intimidate older people, poor people, maybe people of color. And they set up an arrangement where, at least at the beginning, it looked like students wouldn't be able to vote. But fortunately, student IDs are state IDs.
Yes.
So they could.
They should be able to be used to vote. But that's one of the things that the Republicans say that's not good enough for voter ID. The Democrats aren't opposed to, quote, voter ID. We're opposed to the voter ID restrictions that the Republicans put on them. For instance, in the state of Texas, you can use your gun card membership, your gun permit, but you can't use your state university college ID.
Yeah. Tell me that isn't intended to reduce a Democratic vote.
Of course
vote.
It is. But you see, the Democrats who are confronted with this, they don't make that distinction. They're just like, no, we're not for voter ID. Well, explain why. You're not for the voter ID restrictions. If you made it so that you're really just trying to make sure this is the person who is registered to vote, you open it up so they can show you 20 pieces of ID and say, okay, that's acceptable. We got it. That's you. That's not what they want to do. They want to do it to make it so that they can say, no, right. you can't vote.
Right. Because, I remember when I was younger, anyone who would have suggested voter IDs to begin with, let me start there, the Republicans and libertarians would have been all over that.
Right.
Forget it. No way. Of course, Republicans are really good at embracing things that they otherwise would never embrace if they can use it to undermine, subvert, and basically ultimately destroy democratic life in America. This party has become the party of reaction, of white supremacy. I mean, I hesitate to use the word fascism because it's something very unique in this American case, I think.
Well, Donald Trump certainly displayed fascist tendencies.
Oh, he had every
sign of it.
Yeah.
Thankfully, he's no longer in the White House.
Right.
So we're getting a bit of a break from it. But make no mistake, if he had been reelected, or had held on to his office, just know in these slew of books that have come out recently and what we've learned about the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley, that he was afraid that Trump was going to call in the military and attempt a coup. So know how close we came, how close we came.
Yeah, no, it clearly the case. And whatever we would have called it would have been some kind of dictatorship, authoritarian kind of order. Again, not necessarily as harsh as fascism, because the nature of the Republican Party is just, it would have split the country is what it would have done in a violent fashion, I think. Because New York and California would not have bowed to that kind of stuff necessarily.
No.
But our states in Wisconsin and Florida, you would have, who knows?
You and I would be in trouble because what would we do? I mean, we don't have a gun. And frankly, we have seriously, my husband and I have had discussions on if we should get one or not. Now, I would never touch it. He is a skilled marksman. He can shoot. I saw his target when he went to a shooting range with a former friend.
Friends of mine who would never have thought otherwise have asked the question. But this was a few years ago.
Right. And now it's
maybe
worse.
Now, who knows? I mean, I don't know if they bought guns along the way. I don't even know.
Maybe. I don't know either. We are in this precarious place. So what do you think about the idea of expanding the court? I was talking about Ellie Mistal has this piece in The Nation saying that, I mean, I saw you came in as I was in the middle of that rant.
Yeah, I heard that.
I
haven't read his article yet. It's sitting downstairs. But I can tell you this. Look, the Republicans have done a remarkable job in stealing a lot of things, most spectacularly the Supreme Court seats, not by breaking the law, the Constitution, but by exploiting a capacity to take advantage of the moment. So similarly, there is nothing to prevent the Democrats from trying to enlarge the court.
Right.
There, I mean, it's not something you do lightly. Okay, FDR proposed doing it in 1937. Why? Because the conservative Supreme Court of 1935 had decided that his Industrial Recovery Act and his Agricultural Adjustment Act were unconstitutional. Now, it so happened that FDR himself was already basically convinced that those two laws were inadequate to what he wanted to do. But he knew that for the things that he had just secured, the Social Security Act and the National Labor Relations Act, if that same court pursued the same kind of reasoning, we might not have had Social Security right. and the National Labor Relations Act. So what he did is he proposed in 36, 37 to enlarge the court. And it so happened that it would not have made its way through Congress. That I can tell you.
Okay.
But in fact, it had a very large popular support because there really was fear that the newly enacted Social Security and National Labor Relations Act would be found unconstitutional. And it so happened that the court flipped. It flipped. Now, one argument is that he scared the shit out of the out of the court of the idea of enlarging the court. And the other thing is that in the course of the next couple of years, justices died, justices retired, and he reconstructed the entire Supreme Court.
Wow.
I mean, I'm not saying I wish people on the court would die.
Well, but again, as I mentioned, you got the Democratic leadership that's, I think, 82, I think is the median age or something.
Right.
But the Supreme Court, you got, of course, there's Stephen Breyer who, God damn it, retire already.
But his best gift to democracy, which he believes in so much,
would be
to retire now.
Right.
The other thing is, if you think about the gerontocracy, which is the leadership of the Democratic Party, I mean, you and I, I'm sure, would agree that Nancy Pelosi should have stepped down when she said she was going to step
ago.
Down.
Years ago, exactly.
Look, when she lost, when the Congress was lost to the Republicans,
she never should have gotten the gavel back. That doesn't happen.
The Democrats should never have allowed her to take it back.
I agree.
Okay.
Yep.
And of course, I mean, I'm not against people in their 70s.
Nor am I.
Okay, partly because I'm now in my 70s.
Right. But there comes a time. Dianne Feinstein should not be sitting on the Senate Intelligence Committee.
She's an embarrassment right now.
Right?
In fact. You're right.
It's time for these. I'm sorry, but it is time for them to go home. Now,
when she can say the things she said, it's fairly clear she doesn't have her wits fully about her. So I think you're right. It really is the case. But anyway, to go back to the Supreme Court enlargement, I don't see it as see it as outrageous. Look, there was all the talk of turning D.C. into a state, enlarging the court.
Yep.
I mean,
it's progress.
Look, if we're in the crisis of democracy that Joe says we're in, and I think we're in more of a crisis than even he says we're in, then you bet you do what needs doing.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know what? There was one time when Alaska became a state, when Hawaii became a state. Changes are made. The Constitution, despite the originalists, there are amendments for a reason, right?
Yeah.
It is not as it was the day they wrote it. Amendments, the Bill of Rights came immediately. Amendments are added, changes are made. Now, there are some amendments that are long overdue. The Equal Rights Amendment, hello. D.C. Yeah. should be a state. There are so many other things, but, just those two for a start.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine a whole slew, but a whole host of very important amendments I'd like to see. I think, for example, there ought to be an amendment that guarantees the right to vote.
Absolutely.
Okay, fundamental.
Absolutely. Fundamental. Okay,
and then I would insist that the court start reading labor rights in terms of the right to, basically in terms of the Bill of Rights, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, and so on. So, I mean, yeah, we know that the Democratic Party's hold on Congress is tenuous. Okay. If too many Democrats ride in a car from the House, and end up in an accident, we're in trouble.
Yeah, it's just a handful. I mean, I don't recall a tighter division of power.
Yeah, I don't recall a tighter House, right?
No.
There might have been.
The Senate has been 50-50, but the House, yeah. There's a, I think, four votes separating them. And it should not be this way. And, you know, I know a lot of my listeners get mad when I talk shit about Barack Obama, but he left the Democratic Party in horrible shape.
No, but look. You got me. I
know.
I'm pretty sure we began doing shows together back under Obama,
yes,
right?
Of course.
I thought Obama was truly
terrible.
The most overrated president of his day.
Yeah.
I mean,
you know what was good about it? He was very likable. He was smart. He could speak contemporaneously. He could answer questions off the top of his head. He had a brain. He was somebody that you could sit and have a beer with. But as far as being a great progressive Democratic president, that is not him.
No, and in fact, I mean, no, seriously. I mean, although I will also tell you that I was never an Obama enthusiast.
Nor was I.
Because I knew that when he was running that he was no great progressive because his health care plan, as he floated it, was never universal health care.
No, right?
Okay. Actually, in one sense, though, I didn't like her plan either, given the fact that she blew it back in the 1990s when her husband was president. Hillary Clinton was never truly a universalist on healthcare either. It was going to look the
well,
more important,
in 2016
thing is
they were
both willing. They were both willing to give billions of dollars to big business, to big insurance. And that's the key thing.
Yep.
When you don't create a national health insurance plan by privatizing all of health insurance.
Right.
I mean,
right.
God, you know?
Well, and in the primary in 2016, I voted for John Edwards. Down here in Florida, because he was still on the ballot and his, you know, thing hadn't come out.
If he still had been on the ballot here, I would have done
right. And so, but, and that's why the primaries are so important. And that's why I always bring on candidates who are in the primary. I don't want to wait till the general, because by then it's too late. And by then, chances are we have the corporate, you know, Chuck Schumer or Nancy Pelosi approved candidate, which is the wrong one usually.
Yeah. It is interesting these last few weeks to watch Schumer move ever so slightly to the left, right?
He's trying. Well, but is it lip service or is it real? And I guess
no, I think you know what? I think, you know, maybe Bernie, Schumer, maybe they all got sat down, you know, with Biden or whatever else.
Yeah.
And Bernie read them the Riot Act or something.
Yes. Hold on, David's here. Yes.
Okay.
It was 2008. Oh, that's right. It was 2008. Duh. That's when Obama first ran. Edwards was on the ballot in 2008. Thank you.
Yeah.
He's correct.
Time flies.
First Obama race. Yes. Got it. Yes, I know. Obama wasn't a leader. He couldn't let a pack of Cub Scouts is what David just said, in case you were wondering, because you're mumbling in the background. But he did give us a correct me. It was the 2008 election. Hello. When Obama first ran.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes. So. Anyway,
we stand corrected. Tell David we stand corrected.
Always. And as I always tell him, if you're going to come in and correct me about something, make sure you're right. But yes, please, if I get something wrong, do tell me, because I get things wrong all the time. And I hope
I would think Biden is planning, would like to get a seat on the Supreme Court because he wants to name Barack Obama too.
Oh, God.
You don't think?
I don't think Obama wants it. I think he's enjoying, you know, just being a wealthy man. Hanging out with movie stars.
Well, he's
and
probably
stuff.
Made more than enough.
Oh
right
yes.
Now.
Yep.
Okay. And by the way, she can continue to make big bucks.
Oh yeah, Michelle.
And so
she'll be the breadwinner.
She'll be the big time breadwinner.
Yeah,
there out.
I guess out. I don't know. But so I want to ask you about something else, Harvey, before we run out of time, because talking about the shit that I was going off on. Yeah. You this week or last week. Took on an assignment. You read Josh Hawley's book. Oh my God. You know, I've got books piled up because I'm going to interview the authors and I don't have time for. And all I could think is, oh my God, you sat and read Josh Hawley's book. So you wrote about it for Common Dreams, but
yeah,
really?
Well, you know, the funny part is, funny part, is that I really thought it would be a fun activity because I thought, wow, here's this right winger with a book titled The Tyranny of Big Tech.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, this should be fascinating. And in fact, what it kind of freaked me out, as I explained in the article, because I kept running into remarks that I could have written in this right-winger's book.
Okay.
And in fact, there are three paragraphs in there that I really honestly could have written myself, because they were lines and paragraphs that talked about America in terms of comparing big tech to the corporations of the Gilded Age, these industrial capitalists, and how it was and how Americans rose up to oppose it. And mm-hmm. as if, you know, we should be doing that today. So he was harnessing the past, the radical story of the past, to challenge the corporate powers that be today. And I thought, wow, since when does a Republican go after big business in any decade or generation? It was astonishing. Okay. So, and the more I thought about it, I said, this is really weird, because here's Josh Hawley, who's, you know, was willing to undo the Electoral College vote. Okay. Which Garrett, you know, which yes. basically was the final affirmation of Biden's victory.
Yep.
Here was a guy who walked into Congress on that day where they were going to validate the Electoral College vote. And he gives the fist pump to
yep.
to the soon to be insurrectionist storming the Capitol.
Right.
And I thought, this is incredible. So, and then I thought about it, and it dawned on me that what we really have here is a man. By the way, he's a very smart guy. He got, you know, went to Stanford, Yale.
Apparently
Law School.
So. It doesn't show, but apparently so. I mean,
well,
great.
He's very smart. And okay. I think it's imperative we not fool ourselves. Ronald Reagan was smarter than anyone gave him credit for. It really was the case. So the thing is, it dawned on me that, in fact, Josh Hawley's model, his mentor, you might say, from the hereafter, is Ronald Reagan.
Uh-huh. I see that.
Because Reagan was the man who really did follow his idol, FDR, and tried and grabbed hold of American history to talk about how liberals and Democrats had abandoned the American promise. Now, and Reagan, understand, you know, he hijacked history and pushed it to the right.
Wait, I need to back up a second. Reagan's idol was FDR?
Yeah, yeah. Back in the 30s and 40s, he was an avid Reagan, avid Roosevelt.
Oh, he was a Democrat. That's right. Reagan was a Democrat.
And he was known in Hollywood parties as able to entertain the party by reciting, without script, lines from Roosevelt's speeches.
Wow. So what happened to him?
So, well, I mean, it may have been sex. He actually got involved he divorced a leftist and married the daughter of Harry.
So Jane Wyman was the leftist, and then he married Nancy, who was come from a Republican.
Right, that's right.
Oh,
yeah.
Family.
No, it might have been sex. He claimed it had to do with the communist infiltration of Hollywood, but I think it had to do with sex, probably. So anyhow, but the point is, he did become he moved ever to the right, very much to the right, and was became the television voice in a major speech for Barry Goldwater in 64.
Right,
and everyone assumed, by the way. It should be known that when he ran for president for the third time in 1980, he was not embraced by Eastern capitalists.
Huh. Okay.
They didn't like him. They thought he was dangerous. They wanted George Bush, George H.W.
Oh, wow.
Bush.
Oh, right. Okay.
Okay. So Reagan did, however, have Western capitalists backing him. There was no doubt about that. But to win the presidency, the nomination and then the presidency, he ran against the Republican Party establishment.
Okay.
And in fact, in some ways, even ran against, you know, you might say ran against, you know, big business. And here's Hawley modeling himself. He's running against the Republican Party.
Okay.
The rest of the party are not trying to pretend to be populist. The rest of the party are not going after big tech. This is Hawley.
Right.
And by the way, the likes of Ben Shapiro and others, they're all getting in line with Hawley's argument. This is important.
Well, it is. But, you know, like for the last couple of weeks, I've been talking a lot about big tech, about the monopolies, about the executive order
absolutely.
That Joe Biden signed.
This should have been the liberal progressive argument for years.
Right.
But they gave up. They gave up on all of that. Okay. Oddly enough, Amy Klobuchar brought out a book this past spring, which I read. And I was actually rather impressed because she never spoke on the campaign trail in the way she writes on that in that her book
uh-huh.
called, I think it's called Antitrust or something like that. She wants to break him up too. But the point is that Hawley's out there. He's doing all the conservative shows, even shocking some of the conservatives by his
monopoly, anti-big, right. Huh.
However, he's gone beyond Reagan. Reagan spoke about an American, you know, sort of history that that never existed, you know, divinely ordained kind of stuff.
Right.
But Hawley is talking specifically about populists of the late 19th century. And he pronounces his hero as like Teddy Roosevelt.
Wow.
So okay. I'm telling now, here's the upsetting part.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's the upsetting part. And I'm going to tell, I'm going to reveal something on your show that I've not revealed in my other interview.
Okay. Do tell.
I was originally commissioned to write the review of that book by Jacobin.
Oh, the okay. Socialist the Socialist magazine. Magazine, right?
And the editor I was working with, who it commissioned it, basically took his time and then said, you know, it's not that it, what you basically, what you're saying is not really for our magazine. And I thought, whoa, you know,
because you were complimentary of him.
Well, I wasn't complimentary. What I was saying is I'm taking him seriously.
Right.
It's too easy to trash Josh Hawley. I could trash anyone. If you look on the right.
Sure.
The point is, what if they're actually dangerous?
Uh-huh.
And Josh Hawley's dangerous. He's smart. He's grabbing hold of the radical story of America that the problem for me is this. Well, I've said this to you and to our audience here over and over again. Liberals and leftists have turned their back on American history.
Mm-hmm.
They don't talk about Thomas Paine. They don't talk even about Abraham Lincoln. They don't talk about the populists and the progressives and the socialists and the FDR Democrats. They turn their back on it. And as a consequence, we've left open the door. We did it in 1980 when Ronald Reagan grabbed hold of American history and hijacked it and perverted the story. And now here's Hawley, who's laying hold of actually the radical story.
Right. And taking ownership of it.
If the left doesn't think this is a story worth knowing and hearing as a warning, we're in trouble.
But so Josh Hawley, though, is a Trump apologist. He's in on this.
Yes.
You know, he was one of the people who agreed with the House member to not certify the votes. So, you know, it seems like he's trying to play both sides of it, too.
Oh, but don't misunderstand. He is decidedly a right-wing Republican,
right.
Unreservedly.
Gotcha.
But what Reagan realized is that Americans yearn to make a difference. They yearn to redeem America. Don't forget, Reagan ran on the same. The guy who coined the phrase "Make America Great Again" was not Donald Trump.
No, it was Ronald Reagan.
It was Ronald Reagan.
Yes,
well,
he used
what
that
Hawley's
slogan.
Saying right. is. Look, listen to this. One line.
Okay.
So the paragraph opens. Big tech looms as large as any corporate power in American history. And then he says, and yet their power is ultimately precarious. Why? Because Americans are never long contented to be ruled over by barons. They agitate. They protest. They rebel against it. That is what is happening now. And that is why there is cause for hope.
Huh.
In other words, he's talking to the white working class that is pissed off about big business. Look, these folks who rallied to Trump, they have no affection for big corporations. Their whole motivation is rooted in one thing, and it's not racism. That was cultivated by the likes of Trump.
Uh-huh.
It's rooted in their anger with the Democratic Party that for 45 years was neoliberal.
Huh. Okay.
They're angry about the fact that the Democratic Party did nothing to raise working class living standards. You know, the workers, this is true, you know, white, black and brown.
Mm-hmm.
Ever since the early 70s, working class families have not seen a rise in their standard of living since the early 1970s.
Right. I agree.
So now, Hawley, what he's doing is he's going beyond simply he's beyond the Trump version of politics by trying to harness their sensibility as Americans. He's talking to them, look, we're Americans. We don't let the powers that be boss us around. And he's going to link in people's minds the Democrats and big corporations.
Right.
Don't forget, the Democrats control the House and the Senate. Who voted and blocked $15 an hour minimum wage? Six Democrats.
Yeah, that's right.
So
that's right.
If I sound angry, it's because I am.
You're
because
angry.
Hawley's dangerous, and uh-huh. the left better realize that they have got to start talking about history, and what it means to be an American in a progressive way.
Good luck to us. Harvey J.K. The article he wrote is up at Common Dreams. I will link to it from the blog at NicoleSandler.com. Harvey, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. I didn't intend to reveal the real story, but I couldn't resist.
Of course. Well, and that's why we love you. Thanks, Harvey.
Okay.
All right. Great. Talk to you later. Bye. All right. With that, we are done. We put a fork in a, what day is today? Wednesday. All right. I will leave you with the news because we can. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow. Howie Klein will be here because it's Thursday. All right. And here is the news.
I read the news today. Oh, boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Michael Flynn, Michael Cohen, Roger Stone, Steve Bannon, Paul Manafort, Rick Gates, Alan Weisselberg, George Nader, Elliot Broidy, George Papadopoulos, and now Tom Barrack. All of them are Trump associates who've been charged with crimes since the former guy took office in January of 2017. The latest of the bunch, Tom Barrack. He was arrested Tuesday in Los Angeles on charges of acting as an unregistered agent of the United Arab Emirates. Barrack, a longtime Trump friend who led the former guy's 2017 inaugural committee, also was accused of lying to federal investigators. He was indicted on 7 counts by the U.S. Attorney's Office in Brooklyn. The counts say that Barrack, a former employee and an Emirati businessman, worked under the direction of senior UAE officials to influence Trump policies and public opinion to advance that country's interests. A spokesperson said Barrack is, quote, not guilty and will be pleading not guilty. After a year's postponement and months of uncertainty, the Tokyo 2020 Summer Olympics are underway. And yeah, there's still the 2020 Olympics, even though it's 2021. So organizers in Japan have spent months preparing for 11,000 athletes from over 200 countries and thousands of journalists to arrive. This as the country struggles to rein in its new coronavirus outbreaks. As a precaution, no spectators will be allowed at any of the Olympic events. This is devastating on a number of fronts, most notably economic. The lack of domestic spectators alone could cost Japan's economy $1.3 billion. In the first matchup, the host Japan, which is ranked number 2, beat 8th-ranked Australia 8-1 in women's softball. The top-ranked U.S. beat Italy in the second game of a triple header, but the U.S. women's soccer team was also among the first to play on Wednesday morning. They lost horribly 3-0 to Sweden, ending the U.S. team's 44-match winning streak. So the IOC pressed ahead with the games despite questions about whether that was wise in a country suffering yet another surge in COVID infections. Japanese authorities at the last minute scrapped plans to allow domestic spectators and now say the games could still be canceled. Ugh. Meanwhile, a new Olympic host city has been announced. Brisbane, Australia will be the home of the Olympic and Paralympic Summer Games in 2032. Among all the other disturbing news, here's more. Federal data released Wednesday showed that COVID-19 reduced life expectancy in the U.S. by a year and a half in 2020, and the loss doubled for Black and Hispanic Americans. Overall, the U.S. life expectancy suffered its biggest one-year decline since World War II, according to the Associated Press. Health officials said that the COVID-19 pandemic is to blame for the vast majority of the fall, but drug overdoses and increasing homicides also contributed. So this news of the decline in life expectancy here in the U.S. came the morning after the director of the CDC, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, said in a Senate Health Committee hearing that the highly infectious Delta variant is now responsible for 83% of new U.S. cases. Of course, new infections have been rising, especially in areas with low vaccination rates, although infections and deaths remain, thankfully, far below their winter peaks. But a new push for the people who've not yet been vaccinated is on. As Dr. Walensky said,
this is becoming a pandemic of the unvaccinated.
Now on to the Senate, where on Wednesday, according to the timetable set by Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, they're scheduled to vote to open debate on the BIF, the so-called Bipartisan Infrastructure Framework. Now, all this vote is to open debate. It's a procedural vote to get around the filibuster, but to open debate. But the group of senators working on the text claim they're so close to finishing the outline of the legislation that they want the vote delayed until Monday. I guess we'll find out somewhere around 2:30 Eastern time when the vote is scheduled to be held. And finally, I will not end this What's News report with a fawning story about the billionaire's big dick contest, space race. Instead, I will tell you that while Jeff Bezos spent I don't know how many billions of dollars on a quick joyride up into the air and then back down again, the former Mrs. Bezos, Mackenzie Scott, donated $5.88 billion to the COVID crisis and another $4.1 billion to schools for Black, Brown, and Indigenous people. That's what you do with an obscene amount of money. Just saying. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.